Chapter 1. A Room of Echo's Silk. That was the first thing she knew, the slide of it against skin that felt unfamiliar, too smooth. A scent of lavender and something else, something wild like pine needles after a storm, filled her nose. Lyra's eyes fluttered open to a ceiling that was not hers. It was high, with dark wooden beams stretching across it like the bones of some great beast. Panic, cold and sharp, pricked at her heart. Where was she? She tried to sit up, but a dull ache hammered behind her eyes. A groan escaped her lips, small and weak. Instantly, the quiet room filled with movement. Two women in simple gray dresses appeared at her bedside. Their faces were a blur of concern and something else. Awe? Fear? They whispered to each other, their words like the rustle of dry leaves. It's her, one breathed, her eyes wide. The goddess must have. The other started but trailed off, shaking her head. Lyra's throat felt like sandpaper. Who are you? She rasped. Where am I? The first woman offered her a glass of water, her hand trembling slightly. You are safe, Luna. Luna. The word meant nothing, a title for a stranger. She drank the water, the cool liquid a small relief in the burning confusion. She looked down at her hands. They were pale, with long, slender fingers. No calluses, no scars. She felt a phantom ache along her ribs, a memory of pain with no wound to show for it. Why did she feel like her body was a lie? This wasn't right. Nothing was right. She pushed the soft blankets away. I have to leave. Her voice was stronger now, fueled by a growing terror that coiled in her stomach. This place, for all its comfort, felt like a trap. The very air was heavy with things she couldn't remember. The women exchanged another nervous glance. The Alpha will want to see you, the second one said, her tone gentle but firm. He is on his way. Alpha. The word sent a different kind of shiver through her. It felt important, dangerous. The name of a king, or a warden. She needed to run. She needed to find out who she was, away from these watchful eyes. Because right now, she was a blank page, and she could feel them all waiting to write their stories on her. Her bare feet touched a thick, soft rug. The floor was cold stone beneath it. She took a step, then another, her legs wobbly. The room was huge. A stone fireplace stood cold and empty on one wall. A tall window showed a forest of dark green trees under a gray sky. It was beautiful, but it felt like the walls of a cage. She was a bird in a gilded prison. What did they want from her? What did they think she was? Footsteps echoed in the hallway outside. Heavy. Deliberate. Each one landed like a hammer blow against her frayed nerves. The two women straightened up, their faces paling as they turned toward the door. The air in the room grew thick, charged with a sudden, suffocating energy. It was like the moment before lightning strikes. Every instinct she possessed, even without memory, screamed at her to hide. The door was massive, made of the same dark wood as the ceiling beams. The iron handle turned with a loud click that made her jump. Slowly, the door swung inward. He stood there, framed in the doorway, a silhouette against the dim light of the hall. He was a mountain of a man, with shoulders so broad they seemed to fill the entire space. The scent of pine and wildness exploded in the room, and she knew, with a certainty that defied logic, that it came from him. He was the storm. His face was all hard angles and shadow, his jaw tight. But it was his eyes that stopped her heart. They were the color of molten gold, and they were fixed on her, frozen, staring as if he had just seen a ghost walk out of its grave. A tremor went through his massive frame, a barely there shudder of what? Shock, rage, pain, all of it. He took one step into the room, and the world seemed to shrink until it was only him and her. A low sound rumbled in his chest, a sound that was not quite human. It was a growl of pure, raw disbelief that vibrated through the floorboards and up into her very bones, a sound that promised either salvation or utter destruction. Chapter 2. A name carved in pain. He moved. It was not a walk, but the stalking of a predator. He crossed the vast room in a few long, silent strides, his golden eyes never leaving her face. The two women melted back against the wall, making themselves small, invisible. Lyra stood rooted to the spot, her bare feet cold on the stone, her flimsy nightgown feeling as useless as paper against the force of him. Fear was a living thing in her throat, choking her. He stopped just out of arm's reach, close enough that she could feel the heat rolling off his body. "Who are you?" he demanded. His voice was a deep, rough sound, like rocks grinding together. It was a voice that commanded armies and broke enemies. It was a voice that now trembled with a fury she could not comprehend. Lyra flinched. I don't know, she whispered, the words tasting like ash. It was the most honest and the most terrifying thing she had ever said. A humorless laugh escaped him, a short, sharp bark of sound. Don't know? He took another step, invading her space, forcing her to tilt her head back to look at him. His face was a mask of grief and rage. A handsome face, scarred by a pain so deep it seemed to have been carved into his bones. You stand in my home wearing her face and you tell me you don't know? Her face? Whose face? A spark of defiance flickered through the fear. I woke up here. I don't know how I got here or who you are. Liar, he snarled, the word a physical blow. Just then, an older man with silver hair and kind, tired eyes entered the room, carrying a small leather bag. Alpha Kian, he said, his voice calm. Let me have a look at her. Kian. The name echoed in the empty spaces of her mind. Kian. Why did it feel so familiar? The Alpha, Kian, did not move, his burning gaze still locked on hers. Tell me what you find, healer. Tell me this is some trick, some witch's magic. The healer approached her gently. May I? He asked, gesturing to her arm. She nodded, too stunned to refuse. His fingers were cool and dry as he checked her pulse. He looked into her eyes, then carefully took a small sterile needle from his bag. Just a small sample. To confirm. Confirm what? Lyra asked, her voice shaking. Kian answered, his voice dripping with venom. To confirm that you are who you look like, because that is impossible. The healer was quick. A tiny prick, a drop of blood collected in a small vial. He worked with an efficiency that suggested this was not the strangest thing he had ever been asked to do. The silence in the room stretched thin and tight, a wire about to snap. Lyra's heart hammered against her ribs. She watched Kian, who had turned to stare out the window at the dark forest, his hands clenched into fists at his sides. He was fighting a war inside himself, and the battlefield was his soul. After a few minutes that felt like a lifetime, the healer looked up from a small, glowing stone he had mixed her blood with. His face was pale, his tired eyes were wide with shock. He looked at Kian. It's her, Alpha, the healer said, his voice barely a whisper. The DNA is an exact match. Every marker is identical. It is Luna Lyra. The name hit her again. Lyra. Kian turned from the window slowly. The rage in his eyes had been replaced by something far more terrifying. A dead, hollow emptiness. A void of endless pain. He looked at her not as a woman, but as an impossibility. A wound that had been ripped open anew. He walked toward her until his shadow fell over her completely. He leaned down, his face inches from hers. The scent of him, pine, storm, and a grief so profound it was a physical presence, overwhelmed her. He spoke, and his words were not a greeting, not a question, but a damnation, a ghost story made real. He whispered, his voice cracking on her name, the sound a symphony of agony and disbelief. That can't be. You died in my arms, Lyra. Chapter 3, The Ghost's Nightmare. The words hung in the air. You died in my arms. They were a death sentence and an impossible truth all at once. Lyra's legs gave out. If Kian hadn't shot out a hand and grabbed her arm, his grip like iron, she would have collapsed onto the cold stone floor. The touch was electric, a searing jolt that shot up her arm and straight to her core. It felt like a brand. It felt like coming home. The contradiction made her head spin. He pulled her upright, his face a storm of conflicting emotions. The raw pain in his eyes was at war with a deep, churning fury. "You will stay here," he commanded, his voice leaving no room for argument. "You will not leave this wing of the mansion. Guards will be posted. You are a danger until I find out what this is. What you are." He released her so abruptly she stumbled back. He looked at her as if touching her had burned him. A ghost. A traitor. His dead wife. What was she? The question screamed in the silence of her mind. He turned and stalked out of the room without another word, the heavy door slamming shut behind him, the sound echoing like a final judgment. The prison door was locked. The hours that followed were a blur of humiliation and fear. The kind healer brought her food she couldn't eat and clothes that felt like a costume. He told her his name was Elias and that she should rest. Rest? How could she rest when her entire world was a question mark? She was a ghost haunting her own life, a life she couldn't even remember. She was trapped. Kian gave her a different room. It was smaller than the first, but just as luxurious. Still a cage. A beautiful gilded cage with silk sheets and guards outside the door. She paced the floor like a trapped animal, her mind racing. Who was Lyra? If she was this man's wife, his Luna, why did he look at her with such hatred? Why did he call her a danger? As night fell, a deeper chill settled over her. The shadows in the corners of the room seemed to stretch and writhe. Every creak of the old mansion made her jump. Exhaustion finally began to claim her, a heavy weight pulling her down. She crawled into the bed, the clean sheets feeling cold against her skin. Sleep did not bring peace. It brought fragments, flashes, blood, so much blood. The coppery scent of it filling the air, the slick warm feel of it on her hands. Shouting, men yelling in anger and pain, the clash of steel on steel, a face, a man's face twisted in a snarl. But it wasn't Kian's, it was someone else, someone familiar yet lost to the fog in her mind. Who was he? She tossed and turned, tangled in the silk sheets, a low whimper escaping her lips. The dream sharpened, focused. She was running through a dark forest, branches tearing at her clothes. She had to warn someone. It was urgent. Life and death. But who? Then the dream shifted again. She was no longer running. She was standing in a moonlit clearing. And Kian was there. He was kneeling on the ground, his broad back shaking with sobs. She reached out to him, wanting to comfort him, to soothe the terrible pain radiating from him. But as he turned his head, her breath caught in her throat. His face. It was covered in blood, not his own. It dripped from his chin, staining the collar of his shirt a deep dark crimson. His golden eyes, normally so fierce, were filled with a terrifying broken light. They looked right through her. Her mind screamed. Lyra's eyes flew open, a raw scream tearing from her throat. She sat bolt upright in the bed, gasping for air, her body drenched in a cold sweat. The dream clung to her like a shroud, vivid and horrifying. The image of his bloody face was burned behind her eyelids. And in the silent, empty room, the name that had been a stranger's just hours before was the only sound she could make. A desperate, terrified whisper torn from the deepest part of her soul. Kian. Chapter 4. The pull of the moon days bled into one another, each one a copy of the last. Lyra existed in a state of suspended reality, a ghost in a house of memories that were not her own. She ate, she slept. She watched the dark forest from her window and tried to feel something, anything. But there was only a hollow emptiness where a life should have been. Elias, the kind healer, would visit, asking gentle questions she couldn't answer. He told her she was healing well, physically. But how do you heal a soul that has forgotten itself? Tonight was different. A strange energy buzzed under her skin, a restless thrumming that made it impossible to sit still. She paced her room, the silk of her borrowed clothes whispering against her legs. A brilliant, impossible light spilled through her window, painting the floor in shades of silver and blue. The full moon. Drawn by a force she didn't understand, she pressed her palms against the cool glass of the windowpane. The moon was a perfect luminous pearl hanging in a sea of black ink. It seemed to call to a part of her she didn't know existed, a wild, primal piece of her soul that had been sleeping. A low ache started in her bones, a deep yearning pull toward, what? Toward him. She could feel him. Somewhere outside, beyond the stone walls, Kian was out there. The thought came with an unbidden certainty. She could feel his presence like a magnetic north, a force her body was inexplicably drawn to. Her heart began to beat in a frantic rhythm, a drumbeat against the cage of her ribs. Why did she want to go to him? To the man who looked at her with such hate? It made no sense. It was madness. Her fingernails began to lengthen, her vision sharpening until every leaf on the distant trees stood out in perfect stark detail. A low growl rumbled in her own chest, shocking her. It was her own sound, yet it felt alien. This was a change she couldn't control, an involuntary shift. Her body was betraying her, responding to the moon, responding to him. Looking down, she saw him. Kian stood at the edge of the woods, a solitary figure bathed in moonlight. He wasn't looking at the sky. He was staring directly at her window, his golden eyes glowing with an impossible intensity even from this distance. He knew. He could feel it too. She saw his hands clench into fists, his whole body rigid with a terrible internal battle. He was fighting the pull, fighting the bond that connected them. But the bond was winning, because she could feel his own wolf, the beast within him, clawing its way to the surface. It wanted to answer the call of its mate. It wanted her. The knowledge was not a thought, but a deep, instinctual knowing that flooded every cell in her body. The pain in her bones intensified. This strange half-transformation was agonizing without its other half. She leaned her forehead against the glass, a sob caught in her throat. It was all too much. The confusion. The fear. The terrifying, undeniable connection to a man who believed she had destroyed his world. Across the moonlit lawn, Kian threw his head back. The sound that ripped from his throat was not a word, but a guttural snarl of pure conflict. It was the sound of heartbreak and fury, of loss and a possessiveness so deep it defied reason. The sound traveled through the air, through the glass, and struck her deep in her soul. And in the quiet of her own mind, she heard a single silent word. Not from him, but from the powerful ancient beast that lived inside him. A word that was a promise, a threat, and a brand upon her very being. Mine. Chapter 5. Whispers of a Traitor. The morning after the full moon brought a change. The guards were still there, but the door to her room was left unlocked. An unspoken message. You may walk the halls, but you cannot leave. It was a longer leash, not freedom. Driven by the restless energy that still hummed beneath her skin, Lyra stepped out. She needed answers. And if no one would give them to her, she would find them herself. The mansion was even grander than she had imagined. Halls stretched out like long stone canyons, lined with portraits of people with fierce golden eyes. Kian's ancestors, alphas of the Blood Moon Pack. Their painted gazes seemed to follow her, judging her. Every surface was polished, every corner clean, but the place felt cold. It was a house, not a home. A beautiful tomb filled with ghosts. She passed pack members in the hallways. Men and women with the same proud bearing as the portraits. None of them met her eyes. They would turn away, their faces hardening into masks of contempt. But she could hear their whispers, sharp and venomous, as she passed. The traitor Luna, looks just like she did that night. The goddess is cruel. Cause the massacre. Kian's brother is dead because of her. Each word was a stone thrown at her. Traitor. Murderer. They believed it. They hated her. The shame and humiliation were a physical weight pressing down on her, but beneath the hurt, a new feeling began to smolder. Anger. A hot, bright fury. They were judging a woman who didn't even know herself. How could she have done these terrible things? It didn't feel true. The conviction was small, a tiny spark in the vast darkness of her amnesia. But it was there. I am not a traitor. The spark became a flame of determination. She would not be their villain. She would find the truth. Her quiet exploration now had a purpose. She needed proof, something to show that this wasn't her, that there was more to the story. But where would she even begin to look? She found herself on the upper floor, in a quieter wing of the mansion. One door stood slightly ajar. A deep, rich scent of leather, pine, and kian flowed out from it. His office. Her heart hammered against her ribs. This was a dangerous, stupid idea. If he found her. But the need to know was stronger than the fear. Slipping inside, she closed the door behind her with a soft click. The room was him. A massive oak desk dominated the space, covered in maps and papers. A scent of old books and faint, lingering grief hung in the air. A half-empty glass of amber liquid sat on the corner of the desk, a testament to a long and lonely night. She felt a pang of something that felt dangerously like sympathy. She had to be quick. Where would a man like him keep secrets? Her eyes scanned the room. Bookshelves lined one wall. A weapon cabinet stood in the corner. It all felt too obvious. Her gaze fell back to the desk. It was old, beautifully carved. There had to be a hidden compartment. Her fingers traced the intricate carvings along the side, searching for a seam, a button, anything. Her hand brushed against a small carved wolf's head. On instinct, she pressed its eye. A faint click echoed in the silent room. A thin drawer, nearly invisible, slid open from the side of the desk. Her breath caught. Inside, nestled on a bed of black velvet, was a single folded piece of parchment. It was yellowed with age, the edges worn, but it was the dark, reddish-brown stain that made her blood run cold. It was a blood stain, and it was spattered across handwriting that she recognized with a deep, chilling certainty. It was her own. Chapter 6. The Spark in the Shadows. Her fingers trembled as she reached for the letter. The parchment felt brittle, ancient. A relic from a life she couldn't remember, stained with a sin she couldn't comprehend. The blood was so dark, so real. Whose was it? What had she done? What do you think you're doing? The voice was a whip crack in the silent room. Lyra gasped, whirling around, the letter clutched in her hand. Kian stood in the doorway, his massive frame blocking out the light. His face was a thundercloud of pure, lethal rage. His golden eyes were blazing, and she knew in that instant she had crossed a line, a terrible, unforgivable line. She started, but no words came. Her throat was tight with terror. He stalked toward her, his movements fluid and deadly. I gave you the run of the halls. I did not give you permission to sneak into my private office and rifle through my things. He backed her up until her legs hit the hard edge of the desk. There was nowhere left to run. I was just looking, she said, her voice a pathetic whisper. Looking for what? He snarled, planting his hands on the desk on either side of her, caging her in. More secrets to sell? More ways to betray my pack? The injustice of it, on top of the whispers and the glares, finally broke through her fear. Her own anger, hot and sharp, flared to life. I am not a traitor, she shot back, her voice ringing with a conviction that surprised even her. I don't know who I was, but I know I am not the monster you all think I am. Her defiance seemed to stun him for a second. The fury in his eyes flickered, replaced by something else. something deeper and more confusing. He looked down at the letter still clutched in her hand, then back up to her face. His gaze was intense, searching, as if he was trying to peel back her skin and see the soul beneath. "You don't know anything," he said, his voice dropping to a low, dangerous growl. He leaned closer, and the heat from his body washed over her, the scent of him flooding her senses, making her feel dizzy. "You don't remember the way you looked at me. The promises you made." His proximity was overwhelming, terrifying. And yet, her body responded in a way she could not control. A slow, liquid heat pooled low in her belly. Her heart wasn't just pounding from fear anymore. It was something else entirely. A pull. The same primal, undeniable pull she'd felt under the full moon. The mate bond, raw and insistent, sang between them in the charged silence. His gaze dropped to her lips. The anger in his eyes softened, melting away to reveal the raw, aching grief that was always lurking just beneath the surface. He saw his mate, his Lyra. Not the traitor, not the ghost, just her. His control shattered. He leaned in, his head dipping slowly, his expression one of pure agony and undeniable need. Her breath hitched, her eyes fluttered closed. This was wrong. He hated her. She was his prisoner. But her body, her very soul, hummed with a rightness she couldn't explain. She tilted her head up, waiting, wanting. Their lips were a breath apart. She could feel the warmth of his sigh against her skin. Then he froze. A tremor ran through him, and he wrenched himself back as if he'd been burned. The mask of cold fury slammed back into place harder than before. His eyes were chips of ice. He looked at her with disgust. At her or at himself, she couldn't tell. "This changes nothing," he said, his voice a blade of pure ice. "You'll only betray me again." Chapter 7, Purpose in the Pain. His cold words were a wall between them, but the memory of that almost kiss was a fire that warmed her in the lonely nights. Keon avoided her after that. Lyra was left again with the silence, the whispers, and the blood-stained letter she had hidden beneath her mattress. She'd read it 100 times. The words were a simple, coded message about a meeting spot. A plan. It proved nothing, except that she was involved. But in what? The feeling of uselessness was a sickness. She was a prisoner, a ghost, a burden. She couldn't stand it for one more day. She found Elias in the Pax infirmary, a long, clean room that smelled of herbs and antiseptic. It was a place of healing, and she desperately needed to be a part of that. "Let me help," she said, her voice firm. Elias looked up from the bandage he was wrapping. His kind eyes were weary. "Lyra, you are still recovering. I can fetch water. I can clean bandages. I can hold a hand," she insisted, her voice gaining strength. "I need to do something other than pace my room. Please." He saw the desperation in her eyes and finally nodded. "All right, but stay close." Working in the infirmary gave her a purpose. The pack members who were patients at first flinched from her touch, their eyes filled with suspicion. But she was tireless. She worked hard, her hands gentle, her voice quiet and soothing. Slowly, very slowly, she saw the suspicion in some of their eyes begin to soften into confusion. This quiet, kind woman didn't seem like the monster from their stories. This work was important because it was the first thing that felt real, a small piece of an identity she was building for herself. She was changing a dressing one afternoon when the warning bells of the mansion began to clang. A frantic, desperate sound. Shouts echoed from the courtyard. Elias's head shot up. "Rogues," he breathed, his face grim. "They're inside the walls." Chaos erupted. Warriors rushed past the infirmary doors, their teeth bared. The scent of fear and aggression filled the air. Lyra's first instinct was to hide. But then she saw the wounded being dragged in and her new purpose solidified into courage. She would not hide. She would help. Suddenly, the infirmary doors burst open. Two hulking rogues, their eyes wild and crazed, stormed in. They were after the pack's weakest members. But Kian was there in a flash, a blur of fury and power. He moved like a dancer of death, his fists and feet a whirlwind of controlled violence. He took one down instantly, a sickening crunch echoing in the room. But as he fought the first, the second rogue saw an opening. It raised a wicked-looking blade, aiming for Kian's exposed back. Time slowed down. There was no thought, no plan, only pure raw instinct. Lyra grabbed a heavy metal tray of medical tools and threw her entire body forward. She slammed the tray with all her might into the side of the rogue's head. The creature roared in pain and surprise, stumbling, its attack thwarted. The move was clumsy, but it was enough. It bought Kian the single second he needed. He spun around, his eyes locking with hers for a brief, shocked moment, before he dispatched the second rogue with brutal efficiency. Silence fell, broken only by the groans of the wounded. The immediate danger was over. Kian stood over the fallen rogues, his chest heaving. His golden eyes found hers across the room. The hatred was gone. The anger was gone. In its place was a look of raw, stunned disbelief. She had saved him. The traitor. The ghost. His dead wife had just saved his life. And in that shared look, the foundation of his hatred began to crack. Chapter 8. A Brother's Face. The aftermath of the attack was a controlled chaos. The infirmary was overflowing, the scent of blood and healing herbs thick in the air. Lyra worked alongside Elias, her earlier exhaustion forgotten, replaced by a thrumming adrenaline. She moved with a strange, instinctual grace, knowing what was needed before she was asked. She cleaned wounds. She stitched cuts. Her hands, once too smooth and unfamiliar, now felt like her own. For the first time since she had woken up, Kian did not avoid her gaze. He was coordinating the pack's defenses from the doorway, but his eyes kept finding hers. That single, shared moment of battle had changed something between them. A silent acknowledgement, a thread of connection woven in violence and survival. She was helping Elias hold down a young warrior while he set a broken arm. The man was in agony, his face pale with sweat. "Hold his shoulder steady," Elias instructed. Lyra placed her hand on the warrior's bare shoulder, her fingers pressing into his warm skin to keep him still. The moment her skin touched his, the world dissolved. Flash. The infirmary vanished. She was standing in a dark, moonless forest. The air was cold, so cold. The smell of pine and damp earth was overwhelming. She was not alone. A tall figure stood beside her, his hand on her arm. His touch was meant to be reassuring, but a tremor of fear went through her. "It's the only way, Lyra," a man's voice whispered in her ear, urgent and persuasive. "You have to lead them away from the main camp. Kian will be safe. The pack will be safe. It's the only way to stop the bloodshed." She wanted to see his face. She turned her head in the dreamlike memory, and her heart stopped. He had Kian's build. He had the same proud set to his shoulders. He even had the same intense golden eyes. But it was not Kian. It was the man from the portraits in the hall. Younger, with a smoother face and a charming smile that didn't quite reach those calculating eyes. It was Kian's brother, Kael. The memory shattered, and she was back in the infirmary, gasping, her hand still on the warrior's shoulder. She stumbled back, a cry escaping her lips. "Lyra? What is it?" Elias asked, his voice sharp with concern. She couldn't speak. Her mind was reeling, a chaotic storm of images and emotions. A betrayal. Yes, there had been a betrayal. The whispers were right, but they were also wrong. So terribly wrong. She hadn't been aiding the enemy. She had been lured into a trap. She was trying to save the pack, not destroy it. And the person who had convinced her, the one who had whispered promises in her ear, was not a stranger. It was his brother, Kael. The one who the pack claimed had died because of her. The neat, simple story of her treason had just been ripped to shreds. The truth was a tangled, ugly knot. What had really happened that night? Was Kian's brother the hero everyone thought he was? Or was he the true villain? The question hung in her mind, a terrifying new possibility. Was she framed? Chapter 9, The Alpha's Claim. Before Lyra could even begin to process the fragmented memory of Kale, a new commotion erupted from the mansion's main hall. This was different from the chaos of the rogue attack. It was organized. Heavy, measured footsteps of dozens of warriors approaching. A new scent hit the air, unfamiliar and challenging. It was the scent of another pack. A warrior burst into the infirmary, his eyes wide with urgency. Alpha! It's Alpha Riker, from the Shadow Crest Pack. He's at the gates. He's demanding an audience. A low growl vibrated through Kian's chest. His face, which had softened into something resembling respect, hardened back into a mask of stone. Riker? What does that jackal want? He strode from the infirmary, his every step radiating authority and aggression. Curiosity and a strange sense of dread pulled Lyra along. She followed at a distance, staying in the shadows of the great hall as Kian and his guards went to meet the newcomers. The main doors opened, and a man who was Kian's opposite in every way strode in. Where Kian was raw, untamed power, this man was sleek and polished. He was handsome, with silver blonde hair and eyes the color of a winter sky. A cruel, confident smirk played on his lips. Alpha Riker. Kian, Riker said, his voice smooth as oil. I heard you had a pest problem. I also heard a rumor. A rumor so unbelievable, I had to see it for myself. His cold eyes scanned the hall, and then they landed on Lyra, hiding in the shadows. His smirk widened. Well, well, the rumors are true. The ghost of Blood Moon has returned. He took a step toward her. Kian immediately moved to block his path. State your business, Riker, and get off my land. Riker laughed, a sound that held no warmth. My business is with her. He pointed a finger directly at Lyra. You see, there are things you may not know about your dear departed Luna. Before she was yours, she made a promise to me. She was meant to be my mate, my Luna. Her death was an inconvenience. But now that she has returned, I am here to collect what is mine. The entire hall went silent. The air crackled with tension. Lyra's mind reeled. Another lie? Another piece of a past she couldn't access? Kian's voice dropped to a lethal whisper. You are lying. Am I? Riker challenged, his eyes glinting. Ask her. Oh, that's right. She can't remember. He took another step, his gaze fixed on Lyra with a predatory hunger. Come, little ghost. Leave this broken Alpha and his sad memories. I will give you a new life. Something inside Kian snapped. All his control. All his grief-fueled rage and his desperate denial. All the simmering, possessive instincts he had been fighting since the moment he first saw her again. It all exploded in a singular primal roar. He moved faster than she could track. He crossed the space between them and grabbed her, spinning her around and backing her against one of the hall's massive stone pillars. Her back hit the cold stone with a thud. His golden eyes were blazing, no longer human. They were the eyes of the Alpha, the possessive beast within. She is not yours, he snarled at Riker, his face buried in the curve of her neck. His scent enveloped her, intoxicating and overwhelming. Her body went limp against the pillar, every instinct screaming with a terrifying, thrilling submission. She is mine, he growled, his voice a vibration against her skin. No one touches her. No one claims her. No one will ever take her from me again. And then, before she could protest, before she could even breathe, he sank his teeth into the sensitive flesh where her neck met her shoulder. A sharp, searing pain shot through her, so intense it was almost pleasure. A cry was torn from her lips as his teeth bit down, marking her, branding her, claiming her in the most permanent way a wolf could. The mark of the Alpha. A public, undeniable declaration for all the world to see. Mine. Always. Chapter 10. The Unbelieving Heart. The new mark on her neck was a searing brand of possession. It throbbed with a life of its own, a direct line to Kian's soul. Lyra could feel him now in a way that defied explanation. She felt the turbulent storm of his emotions, the possessive pride, the burning anger at Riker, and underneath it all, a deep, churning well of confusion and pain. He had claimed her, but he had not accepted her. The act was a contradiction that left her feeling more lost than ever. He had dragged her away from the great hall and into his office, the sight of their near kiss. The door slammed shut, leaving them in a suffocating silence charged with unspoken words. Riker and his pack had been forced to retreat, but the threat of them lingered in the air like poison. "What was that?" she finally whispered, her fingers ghosting over the tender, swollen mark. It hurt. But it was a pain that her body, her wolf, seemed to welcome. "That was a message," Kian ground out, his back to her as he stared into the fireplace. "A message that you belong to the Blood Moon Pack, that you belong to me." The memory of Kale's face, of his manipulative whispers, gave her a sliver of courage. The truth was more important than her fear. He was lying, wasn't he? "Riker, I never made him a promise." "It doesn't matter," Kian said, turning to face her. The firelight danced across the hard planes of his face, making his eyes glow like embers. "He sees you as a weakness, a prize to be stolen to destabilize my power." "Is that all I am to you?" she asked, her voice trembling. "A possession? A symbol of your power?" The question hit him. She saw it in the flicker of his eyes, a flash of pain he quickly concealed. "You are a complication." "No," she said, taking a step closer. The bond hummed between them, a current of energy that made the air thick. "I am the truth you refuse to see." She had to tell him. She had to try. "Kian, the attack, the massacre, it wasn't what you think. I remember something." His body went rigid. "What?" "It was Kale," she blurted out, the words tumbling over each other in her desperation. "He came to me. He said the only way to save the pack, to save you, was to lead the rogues on a false trail. He said it was a plan. He was whispering to me, convincing me." She watched his face, praying for a sign of belief, of understanding. She saw none. His expression turned to ice. A cold, dangerous fury radiated from him, 1,000 times worse than his previous anger. "Do not," he said, his voice a low, lethal whisper. "Speak his name. Do not desecrate the memory of my brother with your venomous lies." "It's not a lie," she cried, tears of frustration springing to her eyes. "I saw him, in my mind. It was his face." "My brother was a hero," Kian roared, slamming his fist down on the oak desk. The wood groaned under the force of the blow. "He died trying to stop you and your traitorous allies. I held his body. I saw the life leave his eyes." His pain was a raw, living thing in the room, a beast he had kept caged for years. "Then he lied to you too," she insisted, taking another step. "He lied to us both. You have to believe me." He looked at her, and his gaze was filled with a pity that was worse than his hatred. It was the look of a man seeing nothing but a broken, manipulative doll. "The ghost in my house is a liar," he said, his voice flat and dead. "Get out of my sight." The finality in his tone broke her. He would never believe her. The truth was lost, buried under the weight of a hero's memory, and she was trapped, forever the villain in his story. Chapter 10, The Unbelieving Heart. The new mark on her neck was a searing brand of possession. It throbbed with a life of its own, a direct line to Kian's soul. Lyra could feel him now in a way that defied explanation. She felt the turbulent storm of his emotions, the possessive pride, the burning anger at Riker, and underneath it all, a deep, churning well of confusion and pain. He had claimed her, but he had not accepted her. The act was a contradiction that left her feeling more lost than ever. He had dragged her away from the great hall and into his office, the site of their near kiss. The door slammed shut, leaving them in a suffocating silence charged with unspoken words. Riker and his pack had been forced to retreat, but the threat of them lingered in the air like poison. "What was that?" she finally whispered, her fingers ghosting over the tender, swollen mark. It hurt, but it was a pain that her body, her wolf, seemed to welcome. "That was a message," Kian ground out, his back to her as he stared into the fireplace. "A message that you belong to the Blood Moon Pack, that you belong to me." The memory of Kale's face, of his manipulative whispers, gave her a sliver of courage. The truth was more important than her fear. He was lying, wasn't he? Riker. "I never made him a promise." "It doesn't matter," Kian said, turning to face her. The firelight danced across the hard planes of his face, making his eyes glow like embers. "He sees you as a weakness, a prize to be stolen to destabilize my power." "Is that all I am to you?" she asked, her voice trembling. "A possession? A symbol of your power?" The question hit him. She saw it in the flicker of his eyes, a flash of pain he quickly concealed. "You are a complication." "No," she said, taking a step closer. The bond hummed between them, a current of energy that made the air thick. "I am the truth you refuse to see." She had to tell him. She had to try. "Kian, the attack, the massacre, it wasn't what you think. I remember something." His body went rigid. "What?" "It was Kale," she blurted out, the words tumbling over each other in her desperation. "He came to me. He said the only way to save the pack, to save you, was to lead the rogues on a false trail. He said it was a plan. He was whispering to me, convincing me." She watched his face, praying for a sign of belief, of understanding. She saw none. His expression turned to ice. A cold, dangerous fury radiated from him, 1,000 times worse than his previous anger. "Do not," he said, his voice a low, lethal whisper. "Speak his name. Do not desecrate the memory of my brother with your venomous lies." "It's not a lie," she cried, tears of frustration springing to her eyes. "I saw him, in my mind. It was his face." "My brother was a hero," Kian roared, slamming his fist down on the oak desk. The wood groaned under the force of the blow. "He died trying to stop you and your traitorous allies. I held his body. I saw the life leave his eyes." His pain was a raw living thing in the room, a beast he had kept caged for years. "Then he lied to you too," she insisted, taking another step. "He lied to us both. You have to believe me." He looked at her, and his gaze was filled with a pity that was worse than his hatred. It was the look of a man seeing nothing but a broken, manipulative doll. "The ghost in my house is a liar," he said, his voice flat and dead. "Get out of my sight." The finality in his tone broke her. He would never believe her. The truth was lost, buried under the weight of a hero's memory. And she was trapped, forever the villain in his story. Chapter 11. A Journal of Lies. Kian stood in the echoing silence of his office long after she was gone. It was Kale. Her words were poison, a desperate lie meant to twist the knife, to corrupt the one pure thing he had left from that night, his brother's sacrifice. He drained the glass of amber liquor on his desk, the burn in his throat doing nothing to quell the fire in his gut. It was a lie. It had to be. Lyra was a master of deceit. She had fooled him once, and she was trying to do it again. And yet, the conviction in her eyes, the raw, desperate plea, it gnawed at him. Why that lie? Why implicate Kale, the one person whose death was the undeniable proof of her betrayal? It was too cruel, too specific. He found himself walking through the silent mansion, his feet carrying him to a part of the house he rarely visited, a door he had ordered to be kept locked. Kale's room. He unlocked it, the air that greeted him stale with disuse and old memories. Everything was just as his brother had left it, a shrine to a ghost. He had kept it perfect, a monument to the hero his brother was. Because if Kale was a hero, then Kian's grief had meaning. His rage was justified. His eyes scanned the room. The neatly made bed, the shelf of books on battle strategy, the silver trophy from his first formal hunt. It was the room of a good man, an honorable wolf. He was about to turn and leave, to lock the door on his moment of doubt, when he saw it. Tucked away on the bottom shelf, behind a row of thicker tomes, was a small, leather-bound journal. Kian had never seen it before. His heart began to pound a slow, heavy rhythm against his ribs. This felt like a desecration, an invasion. But her tear-streaked face flashed in his mind. He had to be sure. He had to kill this poisonous doubt once and for all. He pulled out the journal. Kale's familiar, elegant handwriting filled the pages. At first, the entries were normal. Pack business. Frustrations with training. But as he flipped further, the tone began to change. The entries became darker, more obsessive. And they all centered on one person. Lyra. She looks at him like he hangs the moon in the sky. She doesn't see me. She never sees me. He is Alpha. He has everything. The power. The respect. Her. It is not fair. I am smarter. I am more cunning. She should have been mine. Kian's blood ran cold. He kept reading, his hands starting to shake. The writing grew more frantic, more unhinged. It was a descent into a madness he had never known his brother possessed. And then he found the final entries, the ones from the week of the massacre. The plan is in motion. I have told her the rogues will only follow her, that it is a diversion to save Kian. She is so noble, so trusting. She believes she is saving him, the fool. She will lead them right to the ambush I have arranged for my brother's most loyal guards. Riker is paid. He will provide the rogues. Once the chaos begins, I will take care of the guards. And in the confusion, I will take care of Lyra. If I cannot have her, no one will. Kian will think she betrayed him. He will break. And I will be there to help him pick up the pieces. I will be the hero. The world tilted. The room swam before Kian's eyes. The stone-cold certainty he had built his life on for years, shattered. It was all a lie. Every moment of his grief, every second of his hatred for her. All of it was built on the words of a monster. Kyle hadn't been a hero. He was a jealous, manipulative murderer. And Lyra, she wasn't a traitor. She was a victim, an innocent woman he had been torturing for weeks. The crushing weight of his guilt was so immense, so absolute, it brought him to his knees. The journal slipped from his numb fingers. He had held her, hated her, marked her, and she had been innocent the entire time. Just as a strangled sob of pure agony tore from his throat, the door to the room burst open. A frantic guard stood there, his face ashen. Alpha, Riker's wolves, they came over the northern wall. It was a distraction. They're gone. Kian looked up, his soul a hollowed-out cavern of despair. What are you talking about? The guard's voice cracked. They took her, Alpha. They took the Luna. They took... Chapter 12, The Alpha's Vow. For a single silent moment, Kian did not move. He remained on his knees, surrounded by the ruins of his world, the guard's frantic words echoing in the dead air of his brother's room. They took her. The two truths crashed into him at once, a collision of forces so catastrophic it should have annihilated him. She was innocent, and she was gone. The guilt was a physical thing, a black hole opening in his chest, threatening to swallow him whole. He had pushed her away. He had called her a liar. He had left her vulnerable, and now the jackals had snatched her from his grasp. His wolf, the beast he had kept shackled by grief and anger for years, surged forward. It did not ask for permission. It took control. The guilt, the despair, the soul-crushing agony, it burned it all away, using it as fuel for a singular, elemental emotion, rage, a pure, white-hot inferno of fury that consumed everything in its path, his vision tinged with red at the edges. The bond, their bond that he had ignored and fought against, was now screaming in his mind. It was a silver cord pulled taut across an impossible distance, vibrating with her terror, her pain. He rose to his feet, not as a grieving alpha, but as an instrument of vengeance. The guard took an involuntary step back, his eyes wide with fear at the raw, untamed power rolling off Kian in waves. "Sound the horns!" Kian's voice was a low, terrifying rumble, the sound of an earthquake starting deep within the earth. "Gather every warrior, every scout, every wolf able to run." He did not wait for an answer. He stormed from the room, his long strides eating up the distance through the halls of the mansion. Pack members scrambled out of his way, their faces a mixture of confusion and fear. They had only ever seen their alpha cold and contained in his anger. They had never seen this. This was not control. This was a force of nature about to be unleashed. He reached the grand hall, the site of his arrogant, possessive claim only hours before. His elite warriors were already gathering, their faces grim. They saw him, and a hush fell over them. They saw the change, the alpha of their stories, the primal, territorial beast of their legends, was standing before them. His golden eyes were no longer the eyes of their leader. They were the eyes of a predator whose mate had been stolen. He did not need to shout. His voice cut through the air, sharp and deadly as obsidian. "Alpha Riker has stolen what is mine," he began, each word laced with a deadly promise. "He has taken the Luna of this pack. He has signed his own death warrant, and the death warrant of any wolf who stands with him." He let his gaze sweep over them, a king demanding absolute fealty. "We will not wait for dawn. We will not plan a siege. We run now. We hunt. We will tear down the walls of his pack house stone by stone. We will burn his lands to ash. We will not stop. We will not rest until she is back." The warriors straightened, their own eyes beginning to glow, their own wolves rising to answer the call of their alpha. A low growl of agreement rumbled through the hall. Kian looked past them all, his gaze fixed on the distant northern horizon where Riker had taken her. The bond pulled at him, a physical ache in his chest. He could feel her fear, and it was a poison in his veins. The guilt was still there, a cold stone in the heart of the inferno, but it was no longer a weight. It was a whetstone sharpening his rage to a razor's edge. He had failed her. He had wronged her in the worst possible way. He might never earn her forgiveness. He might not deserve it. But that didn't matter now. He made a silent vow, a promise to her, to the bond, to the sliver of his own shattered soul. "Even if she never forgives me, I will bring her home." Chapter 13, The Alpha's War. The world was a symphony of violence, and Kian was its conductor. He ran on four legs, his massive black wolf a shadow of death streaking through the moonlit forest. His pack moved with him, a single, fluid entity of muscle and claw driven by the righteous fury of their alpha. The bond pulled him north, a silver cord of pure agony. Lyra's fear was a frantic, terrified heartbeat drumming in his soul, and it fueled his rage. There was no strategy. There was no plan. There was only a destination and a promise of retribution. Riker's territory smelled of weakness and stale pine. The Shadow Crest pack was not ready for this. They expected a parley, a negotiation. They did not expect a force of nature. Kian's pack hit their border patrols like a tidal wave, a silent, deadly surge that swept away the sentinels before they could even howl a warning. There was no honor in this fight, no warrior's code. This was an extermination. This was a rescue. They reached the main settlement, a fortress of timber and stone that looked formidable, but was built on a foundation of arrogance. Kian did not pause. He shifted back to his human form mid-stride, his momentum carrying him forward as he slammed his shoulder into the main gates. The thick wood groaned, splintering under the force of his alpha power. His warriors followed, a river of snarling fur and flashing teeth flooding the compound. Screams and the sounds of battle erupted around him, but Keon heard none of it. He was a shark in bloody water, filtering out all senses except for one, the scent of his mate. It was faint, tainted with the stench of Riker and the metallic tang of fear, but it was there. He followed it, a primal compass guiding him through the chaos. He crashed through doors and threw aside any wolf foolish enough to stand in his way. His path led him down into the cold, damp earth beneath the keep, the dungeon. The air was thick with mildew and despair, and her scent was so strong here it was a physical blow. He saw the door, thick iron bars set into the stone. Two of Riker's guards stood before it, their faces pale with terror. They raised their blades, but they were children playing at war. Keon dispatched them with two brutal, efficient movements, their bodies slumping to the floor before they could even cry out. He ripped the iron door from its hinges with a guttural roar, the shriek of tortured metal echoing in the small space. And then he saw her. She was chained to the far wall, her wrists raw and bloody. Her simple dress was torn, her hair a wild tangle around a face that was pale and smudged with dirt. She was half unconscious, her body slumped against the cold stone, but her head was lifted, her clouded eyes staring at the space where the door had been. The bond was singing to her, a lullaby of hope in her nightmare. A low, delirious whisper escaped her chapped lips, a sound that shattered the last of Kian's control and remade his world. Chapter 14. A Savage Reunion. Lyra was floating in a sea of pain and confusion. Riker had been here, his oily voice whispering poison in her ear. He spoke of promises she'd never made, of a life he would give her. But his touch was cold, his eyes were cruel, and her every instinct screamed that he was a liar. The chains were heavy, rubbing her skin raw, a constant reminder of her helplessness. Her own wolf paced restlessly under her skin, a caged beast snarling at the bars of her fear. It wanted out, it wanted to rip and tear and fight, a distant crash, shouts. The scent of blood, her pack's blood, filled the air, and a strange, fierce hope ignited in her chest. He's here. The dungeon door exploded inward. Through the haze of her pain, she saw a figure of pure, unadulterated rage. Keon. He was not the cold, conflicted alpha from the mansion. This was a primal god of war, his eyes burning with golden fire, his body radiating a power that made the very stones tremble. He was the most terrifying and beautiful thing she had ever seen. He tore the guards apart, his movements a blur of deadly force. And then he was there, ripping the chains from the wall as if they were made of paper. He reached for her. Lyra. His voice was a raw, broken sound. But the wolf inside her, traumatized and cornered, did not see a rescuer. It saw another alpha, another male trying to dominate her, to cage her. It saw a threat. With a snarl that was not her own, she launched herself at him. Her attack was pure instinct. Nails that were suddenly claws raked at his face. Her teeth, suddenly sharp, snapped at his throat. She was a whirlwind of feral desperation. Keon grunted in shock, stumbling back, his arms coming up to defend himself rather than to attack. He could have broken her with a single blow, but he didn't. He simply took it, his face a mask of agony as his own mate tried to tear him apart. "Lyra, stop, it's me!" he grunted as she slammed into him, her fists beating against his chest. But she couldn't hear him. Her wolf was in control, blind and deaf to anything but the perceived threat. They crashed against the stone wall, a brutal, tangled mess of limbs. He finally managed to grab her wrists, pinning her against the cold, damp stone, his body pressing hers, immobilizing her. She struggled, a wild animal in a trap, a guttural growl ripping from her throat. And then it happened. The place where he had marked her, the new raw brand on her neck, pressed against his skin. The point of contact exploded with heat, a white-hot nova of pure energy. The bond flared between them, a psychic detonation that bypassed thought and struck her soul. A scream was torn from her, but it was not a scream of pain. It was a scream of release. The final wall in her mind, the last dam holding back the flood of her past, shattered into a million pieces. Light, sound, memory. It all came rushing back in a tidal wave. Her life before, her love for Kian, the laughter, the tenderness, the scent of the forest after rain, his smile, the real one, the one that made his eyes crinkle at the corners, the warmth of his hand in hers, everything. The joy of it was so intense it was painful, and right behind it, the darkness, the full, complete, and horrifying truth of the night she died. Chapter 15. The Second Death. The world came crashing down. Lyra's struggles ceased, her body going limp in Kian's arms. The feral light in her eyes vanished, replaced by a dawning, soul-deep horror. She stared up at him, at his face, now bleeding from the scratches her own hands had made, and she saw him for the first time, not as a captor, not as a stranger, as her mate, her Kian, the man she had loved with every fiber of her being. "I remember," she gasped, the words catching in her throat. The memories were no longer flashes. They were a relentless cinematic reel playing out behind her eyes. She saw it all. Kale, his face a mask of false concern, feeding her lies about a secret plan, the promise that he was protecting his brother, her own naive trust. She remembered slipping out into the woods, believing she was a hero, a decoy to save them all. The memory of the ambush was brutally clear. The rogues emerging from the trees, their eyes not on her but on the small group of Kian's most loyal guards who had followed her. A setup. It had all been a setup. She remembered the fighting, the chaos, and then the final devastating moment. Kyle. He appeared through the trees, not as a warrior, but as a shadow. He grabbed her from behind, his arm a steel band across her chest. She saw his face then, the charming smile gone, replaced by a twisted mask of jealous rage. "If I can't have you," his voice, a cold whisper in her ear echoed in her memory. "He never will." She remembered the sharp, blinding agony in her side, a pain so intense it stole her breath. She looked down and saw the hilt of a silver dagger, its blade buried deep within her. He had stabbed her, his own brother. She remembered falling, the life draining from her, her eyes searching the chaos. And she saw Kian. He was just breaking through the tree line, his face a canvas of pure horror as he saw her collapse. He saw his mate fall, and he saw his brother, Kale, standing over her with a bloodied sword, a fabricated hero in a play of his own making. The ultimate betrayal. Back in the cold, damp dungeon, the phantom pain became real. A searing, agonizing fire erupted in her side, in the exact same spot as the memory. A low gasp escaped her lips, and she instinctively clutched at her dress. Her fingers came away, wet and dark. She looked down. A crimson stain was spreading rapidly across the simple fabric of her borrowed dress. The stress of the kidnapping, the violence of the fight, the sheer psychic trauma of her memories returning all at once. It had been too much. The ancient, magically sealed wound had been torn open. Her eyes, wide with the final, tragic truth, met Kian's. All the anger, all the hate he had shown her, it all made a terrible kind of sense now. He had been deceived, just as she had. "Kian," she breathed, her voice a fragile whisper. The last of her strength gave out, her knees buckled. For the second time in his life, Kian caught his mate in his arms as she collapsed, a fatal wound bleeding out, her life fading before his very eyes. The nightmare had come back. And this time, it was all his fault. Chapter 16. The Fading Moon. Time ceased to exist. There was only the run. Kian moved through the forest, a phantom of grief and fury, the limp, fragile body of his mate cradled against his chest. Lyra was impossibly light, as if her soul were already beginning to leave her body. Her blood soaked into his shirt, a warm, wet stain that was a constant accusation. His pack formed a running shield around him, a silent, grim procession cutting a path back to their home. But he was alone in his nightmare, Every beat of his heart was a hammer of guilt. This is my fault. I did this. I did this. He burst into his own infirmary like a storm, the controlled calm of the place shattering at his arrival. Elias rushed forward, his face paling as he saw the blood, saw the slackness of Lyra's limbs. On the bed, now, the healer commanded, his voice the only authority Keon would have obeyed. He laid her down as gently as his trembling arms would allow. She looked like a broken doll on the clean white sheets, the spreading crimson stain a gruesome flower blooming on her dress. Elias was a whirlwind of motion, cutting away the fabric, exposing the wound. It was old and new at the same time, a vicious gash in her side that pulsed with a faint, dark energy. It was not bleeding like a normal wound. It was weeping her life force away. Her pulse is weak. Fading, Elias muttered, his hands working frantically, applying poultices that sizzled and smoked against the cursed flesh. Nothing worked. The wound seemed to mock his efforts. I can't stop it, Alpha. The magic is too old, too deep. It's a wound of betrayal, sealed by a death that was not a true death. I don't have the power to mend something like this. The healer's words were a death sentence. Keon, the Alpha of the Blood Moon Pack, a wolf of immense power who could command armies and tear his enemies limb from limb, was utterly and completely helpless. He could not fight this. He could not command it to heal. He could only watch as the woman he loved slipped away from him for a second time, all because he had been a blind, arrogant fool. The guilt was a physical poison choking him. He stumbled back from the bed, from the scent of her fading life. He needed air. He needed a god to bargain with. He found himself outside, in the main courtyard, under the cold, indifferent light of the moon. It was no longer full, but a waning crescent, a silver sickle in the sky. He fell to his knees on the hard stone, his head thrown back, a raw, broken sound tearing from his throat. It was not a howl, it was a plea, a prayer from a man who had not prayed in years. Moon goddess, he choked out, the words ripped from the deepest part of his soul. You brought her back to me. Why? Why show me what I had lost only to take her again? Silence was his only answer. Don't do this, he begged, tears he hadn't shed since he was a child now streaming down his face, carving hot tracks through the dirt and blood on his cheeks. Don't let my ignorance be her end. I was wrong. I was a fool, blinded by a ghost. Take me instead. My life for hers. Please. It's all I have to offer. Take my life. Just let her live. He offered his throat to the sky, a final desperate act of submission. He would give anything, sacrifice everything to undo the damage his unbelieving heart had wrought. Chapter 17. The Price of Forgiveness. The world around Keon dissolved into a sea of silver mist. The stone courtyard, the sounds of the frantic infirmary, the very chill of the night air. It all faded away. He was kneeling in a place of profound silence, a field of moon-dusted silver grass that stretched to an unseen horizon. He was not alone. She stood before him, a figure woven from moonlight and shadows, the moon goddess. She was not the soft, maternal deity of the pack's stories. She was ancient, her eyes holding the cold, eternal light of distant stars. Her power was a quiet, immense pressure that demanded truth. You would offer your life, little Alpha? Her voice was not a sound, but a thought that bloomed directly in his mind. It was as beautiful as it was terrifying. A life for a life. The prayer of a grieving child. It is the creed of vengeance. It is the very poison that created this wound. Keon bowed his head, the truth of her words cutting deeper than any blade. Then what can I offer? He pleaded. What can I do? I will do anything. The goddess seemed to study him, her ageless gaze peeling back the layers of his rage and grief to see the raw, broken soul beneath. The wound was not made by a blade alone, she explained, her mental voice softening slightly. It was carved by a brother's jealousy. It was deepened by an alpha's hatred. It was sealed by a love that was denied. A life cannot heal it. Vengeance cannot close it. Only its opposite has the power to mend what has been so thoroughly broken. Kian looked up, his mind racing, struggling to understand. Its opposite? Love? Love is the foundation, the goddess corrected gently. But the wound is infected with the sin of your own making. You did not just mourn a traitor, little Alpha. You created one. You took an innocent, and with your rage and your pain, you painted her as a monster. You punished a victim for the crimes of a villain. Your hatred was a new poison poured into an old wound every single day she was in your house. The weight of his sin was crushing. He had not just been mistaken. He had been cruel. He had been the second villain in her story. Love alone is not enough, the goddess concluded, her form beginning to shimmer. The price is higher. It requires a love purified by absolute forgiveness. You must forgive the brother who betrayed you. You must forgive the mate who you believe has failed you. And the hardest part, you must find a way to forgive yourself for the unforgivable pain you have caused her. Only then can your love become a balm instead of a poison. The choice is yours. The silver mist receded. Kian was back on the cold stones of the courtyard, the sounds of the real world rushing back in. He understood. It wasn't a bargain of sacrifice. It was a test of his soul. He scrambled to his feet and ran back to the infirmary. He knelt by Lyra's side. She was so pale, so still. Her breathing was a shallow whisper. He took her cold, limp hand in his, pressing it to his cheek. The confession he owed her, the forgiveness he needed to find, started to pour out of him in a desperate, broken whisper. Forgive me, Lyra. Forgive me for not seeing you, for not trusting you. Come back to me. Please. Just come back. Chapter 18. The Last Heartbeat. He did not leave her side. Time became a meaningless river flowing around the single, unmoving rock of his vigil. He held her hand, the faint, fluttering pulse beneath her skin, the only thing tethering him to hope. He talked to her, his voice a low, constant murmur in the hushed infirmary. He confessed everything. He told her about his rage, how it had been a shield to hide the gaping wound of his grief. He admitted his jealousy of his own brother, a secret shame he had never spoken aloud. He confessed how her return had terrified him, because it threatened to undo the neat, angry story he had told himself for years. He poured out all the ugliness, all the pride, all the foolishness that had led them to this moment. He was stripping his soul bare for her, hoping its raw honesty could be an anchor for her own. I loved you, he whispered, his lips close to her ear. Before, I loved you so much it was the sun in my sky. And when I lost you, I chose to live in the dark because the light was too painful. And then you came back, and I hated you for it. I hated you for making me feel again. Forgive me for that. Forgive me for being a coward. Elias moved quietly in the background, his face a grim mask. He would check the monitors, his expression growing heavier each time. Lyra's life was a candle flame flickering in a hurricane, and the wind was winning. Kian could feel it through the bond. The silver cord that connected them was growing thin, frayed, losing its warmth. She was drifting away. Don't go, he begged, his voice cracking. Please, Lyra, fight. You are the strongest person I have ever known. You survived death once. Don't let my stupidity be the thing that finally takes you. Fight for me. He choked on the words. Fight for us. He watched her face, searching for a flicker of an eyelash, a twitch of her lips. There was nothing. She was a beautiful porcelain statue. And then the steady, faint beeping of the heart monitor beside her bed faltered. Beep, 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 ep. Kian's head shot up, his own heart seizing in his chest. Elias rushed to the bedside, his face grim. The beeping stopped. It was replaced by a single, high-pitched, continuous tone, a sound that pierced Kian's soul and tore it to shreds. Flatline. She's gone, Alpha. Elias said softly, his hand on Kian's shoulder. Silence. A profound, absolute silence descended on the room. The bond. It went slack. Cold. Empty. The silver cord snapped, and the resulting void was an agony 1,000 times worse than any physical pain. He had failed. His love was not enough. His forgiveness came too late. A sound of pure, animalistic agony was ripped from his throat, a howl of a wolf who has lost its mate, a sound of a soul being torn in two. It was the sound of the end of the world. But as the desolate cry left his lips, something impossible happened. In the vast, empty space where their bond had once been, he felt a faint, ethereal echo, a single ghostly note that resonated with his own pain, the sound of another wolf howling back from across the veil, her wolf, and in the crushing silence of the room, from the woman lying lifeless in his arms, came a single shuddering gasp, a breath. Chapter 19. A Conditional Forgiveness. The first thing Lyra knew was warmth. Not the suffocating heat of a nightmare, but a gentle, steady warmth that seeped into her bones. It was the feeling of a hand holding hers. The bond, once a snapped cord of agony, was now a soft, luminous thread rewoven through her soul, humming with a quiet, exhausted love. She opened her eyes. The world was blessedly clear. The memories were all there, settled now, not as a chaotic flood, but as the known history of her life. She was Lyra. She was Luna of the Blood Moon Pack, and the man slumped in the chair beside her bed, his head resting on their joined hands, his face a wreck of sleeplessness and dried tears, was Kian, her mate. His sleeping face was stripped of all its anger and arrogance. He looked young, broken, and so deeply tired it made her own heart ache. She squeezed his hand gently. His golden eyes flew open instantly. They were wide with shock, then disbelief, then a wave of relief so profound it was like watching a drowning man finally break the surface. Lyra, he breathed, his voice raw. Kian, she whispered. Her throat was sore, her body weak, but her mind was her own for the first time. You're back, he said, his voice thick with emotion. He brought her hand to his lips, pressing a reverent kiss to her knuckles. I thought I lost you. Again. The guilt and self-loathing that radiated from him through the bond was a palpable thing. You told me to fight, she said, a faint smile touching her lips. So I did. She saw the question in his eyes, the desperate, unspoken plea for an absolution he did not feel he deserved. She had to give him a piece of it because the goddess was right. Love was the foundation. I heard you. All of it. I forgive you, Kian. A sob of pure, unadulterated relief was torn from his chest, and he buried his face in the blankets beside her. The forgiveness was a gift, a balm on his shattered soul. But as he looked up, his eyes shining with a renewed hope, ready to reclaim everything they had lost, she held up a hand. I forgive you, she repeated, her voice soft but firm. But this, us, we cannot go back to what we were. I cannot be the Luna to an Alpha who does not trust his own heart. I cannot be the mate to a man who cannot forgive himself. He stared at her, confusion warring with the hope in his eyes. The goddess was right, Lyra continued, her gaze unwavering. Your hatred for me was a poison because you were poisoning yourself. You let your brother's ghost rule you. You let your grief become a weapon. I love you, Kian. I think I never stopped. But I will not stand beside you as your Luna until you can stand beside me as a man who has made peace with his own failings. Understanding dawned on his face. This was not a rejection. It was a challenge. The final test. She was not just asking him to love her. She was demanding that he become worthy of that love, worthy of himself. Slowly, with a solemnity that felt more sacred than any pack ritual, he knelt on the floor beside her bed. He was no longer a king looking at his prize. He was a man, stripped bare before his equal. He reached up to the ceremonial leather band he wore on his left arm, the symbol of his alpha status, woven with the fur of his first kill. With deliberate, steady fingers, he began to unlace it. "Then I will not be your alpha," he said, his voice clear and resolved. "Not until I am your mate, first and always." He slid the band from his arm, removing the weight of his power, the symbol of his pride, and laid it gently on the bed beside her. It was an act of abdication, an act of pure, humble love. Humble. Chapter 20. The Uncrowned Alpha. Kian felt a strange lightness after removing the alpha band. For years, the title had been his identity, his shield, and his burden. Now, it was just an object lying on the bed next to the woman who was his entire world. Her challenge had not been a punishment, it was a map, a path out of the darkness of his own making. He knew what he had to do. His healing, and theirs, could not be done in secret. It had to be a reckoning. 2 days later, Lyra was strong enough to stand, and he called for a full pack assembly in the Great Hall. Word had spread of her miraculous recovery, and the hall was filled with the low, buzzing whispers of hundreds of wolves. They did not know what to think. Their traitor Luna was alive, saved by their alpha, who now looked upon her with a reverence that bordered on worship. Kian stood before them on the dais, Lyra standing just behind his shoulder, her presence a quiet statement of unity. He was not wearing the ceremonial alpha leathers, but the simple gear of a warrior. He held the unlaced alpha band in his hand. "For years," he began, his voice ringing with a calm authority that had nothing to do with a title, "I have led you with anger as my guide. I told you we were betrayed by my Luna. I told you my brother died a hero's death protecting us from her. Everything I told you was a lie." A collective gasp swept through the hall. "The truth," Kian continued, his gaze sweeping over his shocked pack members, "is that Luna Lyra was the victim of a terrible betrayal, one orchestrated by my own brother, Kale." He did not soften the blow. He let the ugly truth land with its full, devastating weight. "She was innocent. She has always been innocent. And I was too blind, too consumed by my own pain to see it. I failed her. As a mate, and as your alpha. An alpha who cannot see the truth is not fit to lead." He held up the band. "I am not worthy of this mantle. Not yet. So I am setting it aside. I am temporarily renouncing my claim as Alpha of the Blood Moon Pack." The shock in the hall turned to uproar. Alphas did not simply step down. It was a sign of weakness, an invitation for chaos, for attack. His second in command, a grizzled old wolf named Gregor, stepped forward. "Alpha, you cannot. The pack needs a leader." "The pack needs a leader it can trust completely," Kian countered. "I will earn that trust back, not as your alpha, but as a warrior. I will fight for you. I will protect you. But I will not lead you again until I have proven myself worthy of the title and worthy of my mate." He looked back at Lyra, and his message was for her as much as it was for the pack. This was his sacrifice, his act of humility. He was choosing love over power. His decision hung in the stunned silence. He had thrown his entire world into uncertainty for her. Just as the pack was beginning to process the seismic shift in their reality, the great hall doors burst open. A scout, breathless and bleeding from a gash on his arm, stumbled in. "Alphas," he gasped, leaning against the doorframe. "They're at the border, an alliance. Riker has joined with two other packs from the east. They know you've stepped down. They say the Blood Moon Pack is broken, leaderless, they've come to claim it all." Chapter 21. Mates in Battle. The news of the impending attack sent a wave of panic through the assembly. A leaderless pack was a dead pack. Their enemies were circling like vultures, sensing a moment of weakness. But as the other wolves looked to Kian with fear, Lyra saw the man she knew he could be. He was not an alpha, but a warrior preparing to defend his home. His face was grim, but resolved. He was ready to die for them. But she was not going to let him die alone. While Kian and his warriors prepared for the assault, Lyra slipped away. She was still weak, her body aching from her ordeal, but a new kind of strength flowed through her veins. It was the strength of a Luna who had found her purpose. She would not be a damsel to be protected. She was a queen who would fight for her kingdom. She found him by the armory, strapping on his last piece of armor. He looked up as she approached, his eyes full of a fierce desire to order her back to safety. "Don't," she said, her voice quiet but unyielding. "Don't you dare tell me to hide. I am not the fragile ghost you found in that bed. I am the Luna of this pack. Their fight is my fight." He saw the fire in her eyes, the set of her jaw, and he knew. This was her choice. This was who she was now. He simply nodded, his expression a mixture of pride, awe, and terror for her safety. "Stay by my side," was all he said. The battle met them on the training grounds outside the mansion, 3 rival packs against 1. The odds were impossible. But the Blood Moon pack, seeing Keon fighting in their ranks and Lyra standing fearlessly beside him, found a new kind of courage. They were not fighting for an alpha, they were fighting for their family. "Together?" Lyra murmured to Keon as the first wave of enemies charged. "Together," he breathed back. And then they shifted. It was not the agonizing, involuntary change from before. This was a willing, powerful transformation. Her bones reshaped, her skin splitting to reveal the silver-furred wolf beneath. She was smaller than Keon, sleeker, built for speed and grace where he was built for raw, destructive power. For the first time, they stood as 2 wolves, a perfectly balanced pair. The battle was a whirlwind of tooth and claw. But where there should have been chaos, there was a strange, deadly symphony. Lyra and Keon moved as one. They didn't need to speak. The bond was a flawless conduit for their thoughts, their intentions. She would dart in, hamstringing an opponent, and he would be there a second later to deliver the finishing blow. He would charge into the thickest part of the enemy line, a black-furred battering ram, and she would guard his flanks, a silver blur of deadly precision. They were 2 halves of a single warrior, their movements a dance of death that left their enemies broken and terrified. They were magnificent. They were what a true alpha pair was meant to be. They fought their way to the center of the battle, to where Riker was directing his forces. He saw them coming, this unified force of nature, and the confident smirk fell from his face, replaced by disbelief and fear. As Keon and Lyra cornered the rival Alpha, victorious and bloodied, they stood together under the evening sky. A strange light bathed the battlefield. They looked up. The moon, their goddess, was rising, and it was a deep, ominous crimson. It was not a moon of doom, but a moon of rebirth. A celestial body bearing witness to the moment 2 fractured souls were reforged together in the crucible of battle. Chapter 22, The Alpha Pair. The crimson moon cast the battlefield in an eerie, bloody light. Riker, cornered and desperate, stared at the 2 wolves before him. He had come expecting to fight a broken man. Instead, he faced a unified force he could not comprehend. Keon, a massive black wolf pulsing with raw power, and Lyra, a sleek silver wolf radiating a fierce, intelligent light. They moved as one, their every intention flowing between them through the shimmering bond. Riker lunged, not at Keon, but at Lyra. He still saw her as the weak point, the prize. It was his final, fatal mistake. Lyra did not retreat. She met his charge with a dancer's grace, sidestepping his clumsy attack and sinking her teeth into the muscle of his back leg. He roared in pain, stumbling. The move was a perfect setup. Keon was there in the next heartbeat, his immense weight crashing into Riker's exposed side, sending the rival Alpha sprawling to the ground. The fight was over. Keon stood over him, a low, rumbling growl in his chest, the promise of death in his golden eyes. But through the bond, Lyra sent a wave of calm, a whisper of thought. "We are not him. We are not murderers." Keon looked at her, then back down at the whimpering wolf at his feet. He saw the truth in her silent words. A true alpha ruled with strength, but also with mercy. He shifted back to his human form, his body still radiating power. Lyra shifted beside him, the two of them standing as equals over their defeated foe. "You are beaten," Kian's voice boomed across the silent battlefield. He was not speaking just to Riker, but to the remaining warriors of the rival packs. "You will leave our lands and you will never return. Spread the word. The Blood Moon Pack is not broken. It is whole." He did not kill his enemy. He exiled him, an act of power far greater than simple vengeance. As Riker and his beaten allies retreated into the darkness, the warriors of the Blood Moon Pack let out a triumphant howl. They looked at the two figures standing in the center of the field, not as an alpha and his rescued mate, but as their alpha pair. They lowered their heads as one, a gesture of profound respect and renewed loyalty. Kian looked at Lyra, his eyes full of an emotion so deep it stole her breath. He had fought for her. He had renounced his title for her. And now, he had shown mercy for her. He was the man she remembered, the leader she had always known he could be. He reached out and took her hand, his fingers lacing through hers. The alpha band, the one he had discarded, was gone. But his grip was a vow stronger than any leather or fur. He leaned in, his voice a low whisper meant only for her, a promise that healed the last of the scars on her soul. "Now," he murmured, his gaze full of the future. "We make it right." Chapter 23, A Home Rebuilt. In the weeks that followed, the Blood Moon Pack was reborn. The fear and suspicion that had haunted the mansion halls were replaced by a sense of hope and purpose. The story of Lyra's innocence, Kian's sacrifice, and their joint victory had spread like wildfire, forging the pack into something stronger, more unified than ever before. The mansion, once a gilded cage for Lyra, began to feel like a home. She filled it with laughter, with warmth, with the scent of fresh flowers from the garden. She was not just a survivor, she was a creator, rebuilding her world piece by piece. Kian was true to his word. He worked and trained among the other warriors, refusing to reclaim his title. He was earning his place not through birthright, but through action. He was quieter now, his old arrogance replaced by a steady, humble strength. He listened. He learned. And every night he came back to her, not as an alpha demanding his due, but as a man who was simply grateful to be in her presence. One night, under the light of a full, silver moon, he led her to the moonlit clearing where she had once dreamed of him, his face covered in blood. The memory was no longer a nightmare, but a ghost that had finally been laid to rest. "It is time," he said softly. He held out the alpha band, the one she had kept safe for him. "Are you ready?" she asked, her heart full. "I am ready to be whatever you need me to be," he answered, his sincerity absolute. "But I want to be your mate, your alpha, if you will have me." "I will have you," she whispered, her own choice a firm and joyful thing. He took the band and slowly, reverently, laced it back onto his arm. Then he turned to her. There was no public declaration this time, no audience. There was only them. "The first time, I marked you out of possession and anger," he said, his voice thick with emotion as he gently brushed the old faded scar on her neck. "It was a claim, a brand. This time, it is a vow." He did not demand. He asked, "May I, Lyra?" Tears of joy welled in her eyes. "Yes," she breathed. He leaned in, and the act was one of infinite tenderness. It was not the sharp, possessive bite of a desperate alpha, but the gentle, loving pressure of a mate, sealing his soul to hers. A wave of pure, blissful energy washed through her, healing the last lingering shadows of pain and fear. The bond between them solidified, no longer a simple thread, but a brilliant, unbreakable cord of light. When he pulled back, his golden eyes were shining. He was whole. They were whole. He took her in his arms, and they danced, slowly, in the sacred silence of the clearing, two souls finally reunited, their long winter of grief finally over. Chapter 24. To live in his arms. Months turned into a peaceful, sun-drenched season. The Blood Moon Pack thrived under the joint leadership of its alpha pair. Qian led with a newfound wisdom and compassion, his strength tempered by the humility he had learned. Lyra led with a quiet grace and a fierce, protective love for their people, her own painful journey having given her a deep well of empathy. The whispers that had once followed her down the halls were now replaced with smiles and respectful greetings. She was not the traitor Luna nor the ghost who had returned. She was simply their Luna. She was home. She stood on the balcony of their rooms, the same balcony from which Qian had once stared out in his lonely grief. The sun was setting, painting the sky in strokes of orange and violet. Qian came up behind her, his arms wrapping around her waist, his chin resting on her shoulder. They stood in comfortable silence, watching the peaceful lands spread out before them. His presence was a solid, comforting weight, an anchor in a world that had once been a terrifying, shoreless ocean. The mansion behind them was alive with the sounds of a happy, thriving pack. The scent of pine from the forest mingled with the smell of roasting meat from the kitchens. Children's laughter floated up from the courtyard below. It was a life she had never known she was missing, a peace she had only dreamed of. She thought of the journey that had brought them here, the confusion, the pain, the terror, the impossible return, and the even more impossible road to forgiveness. It had been a crucible, a fire that had burned away everything that was false, leaving only the pure, unbreakable truth of their bond. She leaned her head back against his chest, feeling the steady, reassuring beat of his heart against her back. It was the most beautiful sound in the world. Love, she realized, had not only survived betrayal and death and the loss of memory. It had been forged by it, tempered by it, and made infinitely stronger because of it. It was a kintsugi love. Its beauty found not in a flawless past, but in the golden seams where it had been broken and lovingly put back together. Qian pressed a soft kiss to her temple, his voice a low, happy rumble against her ear. What are you thinking about? She smiled, a genuine, soul-deep expression of pure contentment. She looked out at the horizon, at the promise of all the sunrises they would now share. The final piece of her story clicked into place. A quiet, perfect resolution. I died once in his arms, she thought, the words a soft, final narration in the story of her heart. But this time, I lived there.